Welcome to the episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287, also on LinkedIn, the website, dsmsports.net, where you can find everything and the podcast available on whichever podcast platform is your favorite. I am so excited for today's show. I've been wanting to talk to these guys for a long time. We finally made it happen, and it's perfect timing with NACTA this week, depending on when you're listening to or watching this podcast. NACTA, of course, being the Lollapalooza, Woodstock, whatever you want to call it, for college athletics. And my guests on the podcast today, we have two guests, both from the same company. We have Andy Zielman and Chris Freet. Andy is the president of WMT Digital, and Chris is the EVP and chief strategy officer for WMT. WMT is just has been doing great things, pushing innovation in the space for a long time, primarily in sports, a lot in college sports, but really going beyond to live entertainment across the board and media, and just creating different ways to engage fans and collecting data, as you'll see here, as you'll learn in today's episode around how you use data, connect data across platforms to really make smarter decisions, drive more revenue, data and dollars, and as you'll hear Andy talk about. And WMT has just been pushing the envelope and innovating the space for a long time, working with some schools that are some of the biggest innovators in the space. And just so much good lessons to take away from today's episode. So here it is. Listen to Andy Zielman and Chris Freet of WMT Digital. I am back on the podcast with today's guests. We have a couple of guests, but as I was telling them before we start recording, I've been following this company for years, and now I'm so excited to really dig into it. My guests on the podcast today are Andy Zielman and Chris Freet. Andy is the president of WMT Digital, and Chris Freet is the executive vice president and chief strategy officer of WMT Digital. Welcome to the podcast today, fellas.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Neil.
Thank you for having us.
I mean, WMT is really just on top of so many things that are really of the moment, but it has been for years of, how are we thinking about changing habits and consumption patterns of fans, and really diving into owned and operated versus rented, and different ways that we can present content and technology and new digital experiences. There's so much stuff that we can cover today that WMT has their hands in. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, give us an idea of your guys' backgrounds. I love the different perspectives we're gonna have here, and you guys are both WMT now, of course, but have different pathways to get here. So whoever wants to go first, tell us about your path to WMT and what your position is today there.
Sure. Chris, why don't you lead off?
So WMT, been here almost 5 years. It will be 5 years July 1. Prior to that, 19 years, 11 months on college campuses, Neil. Started at the University of Oklahoma, matriculated down to the University of South Florida in Tampa, then went all the way down to South Florida at Miami. Made the turn to Arkansas in the SEC and finished my time inside of college sports at the University of Kansas, serving Kansas athletics. Joined here 5 years ago, came on as chief innovation officer, which meant carry sales, marketing, PR, partnerships, a little bit of everything. Happy to be in this chief strategy role because of the growth of the company that we've been fortunate to have, and sitting in a role where I can talk to a lot of interesting companies in the space, figure out how we can grow together, meaningfully impact our clients, and provide strategic oversight of clients we work with and the industry at large that we serve.
Yeah, love
Thanks,
it.
Chris. Very different background, Chris's. So I came up through mostly the tech world. And it's really been by design kind of to be where I am today. So started my career out in Silicon Valley after college, doing product management, product marketing, kind of learning the core skills of what it's like to develop product roadmaps, understand market needs, market requirements. Did some consulting work out there. Decided, I wanted to build some hard skills, not just the strategic skills. So went to business school and then moved to investment banking for 3 years. And I worked in M&A and capital raise transactions for boutique bank here in Boston, raising money and selling, small to mid-sized technology companies. And the reason I did that was I wanted to really understand strategic finance. I wanted to be fluent in it. I wanted to understand how money flowed, how businesses succeeded, how they sold effectively. When it comes down to it, we all love sports. We all like playing in these verticals, but there's somebody always out there trying to make some money, right? So you gotta always think about how are you building a business to make money, to drive value for your investors, for your employees, for your partners. So I did that for a few years. Then I took a a brief time away from my private sector career, and actually, I think we'll come back to this a little later on what I learned, but I joined the FBI for 3 years, and that just goes a little bit to who I am as a person. I wanted to take a moment and do something bigger than me, something that was around government service and where I could have that ripple effect on the world, where I could do things that, never got credit for, never recognized for, but had that ripple effect of positivity on the world. So I did that for 3 years, totally, kind of off the career path, experience. And then my wife said, enough of this. A, you're putting yourself at risk, and B, you're making no money. So go back and do something else. So for the last almost 14 years, I've been back in the tech sector. So joined a large company doing, early stage large language models and natural language process called Nuance Communications, eventually sold to Microsoft, running their Microsoft healthcare side of the business. Then I got the startup bug. So I've been in three consecutive early stage businesses since then. The first was a computer vision AI company. I joined there as chief strategy officer, very much like Chris's role now, right? You move in and you're looking for that next growth opportunity. You're kind of moving across different functions, trying to understand what is best for the business, taking that elevated view on how to drive growth forward. We ended up pivoting that company from, it was a MarTech company. We pivoted towards automotive, and ended up exiting to a tier two automotive player. So successful, again, kind of pulling all those different pieces of my business together to drive outcomes that were positive. Then I joined kind of a biotech type data company. It was actually post-COVID. They did what we called wastewater intelligence. It literally sampled wastewater. And it was able to determine the amount of viral pathogen or chemical biomarker in the wastewater to determine what the drug usage in a neighborhood is. Is there COVID or RSV or norovirus flowing through the community? So very, very cool platform and data analytics capability, rooted in a hard science that I joined after that. Then I met Andres. And as you see, I've kind of got a series of different verticals I've worked across. I've never worked in sports, whereas Chris starts off with 20 years of sports. I'm like, I got 2 years. So, but Andres, if you've never met him in person, for anybody that's watching, is one of those genius people that understands and can see around corners. And what he realized and he's always been doing is building a technology company within the sports industry. It's not a sports company that does technology, but he's always viewed this as technology and data first. And he happened to find his roots and deliver value in the sports community. So as he looked at the next stage of growth for the business, he was looking to build out the team with folks that came outside the industry. How can we bring best practices from outside the industry to drive our strategy forward, structure our company effectively, look at the economics of the business, and continue to deliver value for our partners, for our employees, for the investors in the business? And that's what I do. So I sit, partnering with Chris along the strategy. I partner with our sales team. I partner with Andres and Chad Cleveland, our COO. So, I get to float along and, tap into that diverse history, kind of help the company where it needs to get to keep delivering value for our partners.
Absolutely love it. Two diverse backgrounds, and I mean, you've lived like multiple lives. I feel like I want to read your memoirs. So let me know when it comes out.
There you
Anytime,
go.
Andy.
I've got the gray hair to prove it, Neil, so don't worry.
I want to like maybe I'll just put you on the spot right now, Andy, and tell me like how do you describe WMT Digital now? And then maybe I'll go to Chris after around like how that has sort of evolved as the company has evolved in his time there.
So the first thing that I would put in my short list of words which drives WMT is kind of innovative and bold, right? It's always looking for where the industry is going from a digital fan engagement and fan analytics perspective. So, when I first looked at WMT, when I got, reached out by Andres, I said, huh, they do mobile apps and websites. Like, it's not that exciting, right? Mobile apps and websites, very important parts of digital, engagement, but not that exciting. Then I talked to Andres and I understood how he viewed that digital experience, right? It wasn't about a mobile app that was a game day event. It wasn't about a mobile app that was static content. It was storytelling. It was interactive content. It was a data capture mechanism where you're learning more about the fans and drawing them into an owned and operated ecosystem through that digital ecosphere. And that's a totally different expectation than I had before I picked up the phone with him. And it's that level of innovation and boldness, that understanding of where digital fits in the overall fan journey with and within sports or music entertainment. And it's that boldness, that innovation that's driving into our product, is driving into our customer engagement, is driving into our strategy overall. So that's what I love. We really, it's not a mobile app company, it's not a website company, it's a full digital fan engagement and fan analytics and fan intelligence company, because the digital second screen isn't going anywhere. It is always going to be part of a fan's experience in game, outside a game, outside the venue, off season. That mobile experience, that web experience is always going to be a second screen for them. And the amount of data we can capture, the amount of understanding we can get to drive that back to our partners and then provide the right experience for our fans is absolutely amazing. So it's really data and digital combined together was what Andre saw 10 years ago and what we're delivering on today.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting too. As form factors evolve, as you know, different ways to engage evolves, it still comes down to that, you know, data and experience and how you give fans, you know, an engaging experience, however, whatever medium they're using to have that experience.
It's always going to be there. Whatever form it takes, there's always going to be digital augmentation to whatever that experience is, whether it's at home on your couch, whether it's in the stadium. And that's where we kind of sit at the pinnacle of that, driving the future of that.
Yeah. And how have you kind of seen it evolve over the years, Chris? I think early on when I first encountered WMT, it was like, this is a website company. They do apps also. And then it's become like in the servicing mostly college athletics early on. And now it's expanded quite a bit. And the overall remit has expanded quite a bit and the overall scope. So how have you kind of seen it evolve? And how much has it been kind of led by the industry versus led by, you know, the people building things like at WMT?
I'm not sure if I appreciate you giving me that question. It makes me feel old. Early on, the digital strategy just meant whoever was youngest on staff and wouldn't mess up the Twitter password.
Relatable. I've been there. That
Yeah. I mean, I remember at University of South Florida, I asked an intern, "Hey, spend the week figure out Twitter and whether or not this athletic department should be on the platform." And she came back with like a resounding no. She's like, "You can't, the messages are too short. It's not going to work."
was me. We can't fit a whole press release on Twitter. What are we gonna do with it?
So I think there's been a few things, right? For WMT, it was how do we, from an advertising standpoint, deliver audience? And then it was, how do we take that advertising and data sensibility to deliver audience into an owned and operated platform? I saw WMT deliver audience in an advertising standpoint at Miami when we kicked the Miami Heat off the first page of Google. I hired them at Arkansas because there was 3 million people in the state, and I thought it was a very reasonable expectation to get all of them onto our digital platform on an annual basis. There is nothing greater than the Hogs in Arkansas. And so we took that sensibility of data-driven fan delivery and then top-level storytelling and narrative on top of that, and we executed it at Arkansas, and still today they're executing that. As we look at what matters now in 2026, is a lot of what Andy talked about, is it was fan engagement and narrative building and control of that was really important in college sports because it helped you stand out in recruiting. Now recruiting is about paying players through NIL, right? And so we're skating to where the puck is going and giving greater tools. It's the same data sensibility. It's just delivering a different methodology. So now we want to identify those fans for you. We want to build out those profiles for you. And we want to constantly be finding the next Neil Horowitz. And we want to constantly be filling out data points 8 through 10 on Chris Freet every time they visit one of our platforms so that there's opportunity to achieve your goals at a greater pace and further monetize the platform. And it's not new, Neil. Like we were talking about personalization 20 years ago. We're delivering on it now with the products we have in market early with some of our colleges and hopefully very soon with some pro clients and music entertainment clients.
And how does that data picture come together? Like, is it ultimately like you have to get everyone on the same page and like have everything flowing into a data warehouse where you're doing some ETL so that everything's structured and we, you know, we are calling things by the same name and same labels? And like, what has to happen in order to for us to for an organization, for a college, for a team, for an entertainment company, whatever, to even be in the to even be prepared to implement something like what WMT can build?
The technical stuff, you mentioned some of it, but on a big picture standpoint, there's no lack of data. We all know that. I would say that college is generally in a good spot in terms of the insights they're deriving from that data. Where they have been getting stuck for a long time is action. And so we need to step in as their provider to help them take action and in some instances take the action for them, right? There's no There's limited value in insight if you're not testing that insight to see how it can drive your athletic department forward, how it can drive your team forward. And so when we think about data, it's organizing it and constantly recommending to our partners, here's the next thing to do. Here's the next data point to get on Neil. Neil is in your email database, but he's not in your text database, and he hasn't downloaded your mobile app. Do these things to drive to these outcomes. Actions where it's been stuck, that's where I'm most excited about what's coming with our partners in the next 12 to 18 months.
Love that.
Yeah. Just to build off that, big data has been a thing in various industries for a decade plus, right? Pull a bunch of data together and you're going to reveal these insights, the known knowns, the known unknowns, the unknown unknowns. It's just a myth, right? The data has to be relevant and has to be actionable, to Chris's point, right? Yeah, it needs to be clean. It needs to be all in a central place where you can access it. You need to be able to tie it all back to a single unique ID. But it's really about understanding that data and acting on it. And that's where we bring a combination of advanced technology and services to bear, right? It's not about pulling the data together. It's about helping your partners realize and execute on that data to drive dollars, right? If you're not driving dollars in the end, you're not serving their purposes, right? It's not about eyeballs. It's not about engagement. Engagement, eyeballs all translate to dollars. And I think that's the entire construct on which we're building our platform, which is get the data in, provide the services and technology and outputs to drive action that drives dollars and increased revenue capture for our partners. And we all know in college that is a huge demand right now, right? With NIL, how do you drive expenses down and revenue up so we can pay the athletes? And this is all part of that solution.
And Andy, I'd love to get your POV of coming in, not having spent decades in the college sports world and the sports world in general, even of I think in some cases where you're like, oh yeah, sports is ahead of the curve, look at us innovating. But when most people come in and they're like, yeah, sports is slow, they don't they're way behind. Like, look where retail is, look at where healthcare is, or whatever. How far, what did you see? What were they like, oh, there are some really easy, quick wins here. Like, how are you guys missing this? Or like, and especially in a diverse world like college, where you can have two schools and one is way more resourced, way more sophisticated versus another one.
Absolutely. So there are a couple of things that attract me to industries. One is there's got to be money, and there's money in college, and there's money in pro sports, and there's got to be some level of chaos where technology could come in and provide value. There's always a level of chaos in every vertical, but some verticals are under different forms of chaos than others, right? College is, it's under chaos right now. There's a lot changing. There's a lot moving. That means there's a lot of opportunity for technology, next generation thinking to come in and help provide solutions. So that was one of the things that Andres and I talked about early, was all the opportunity that's going to arrive out of the changes and the shifting that's happening within WMT's core market, and even how those shifts can even lead to new opportunities in pro. So was I surprised by the maturity, technology maturity of sports? Not really. I mean, you see it on screen and AWS, these cool stats that you see in game. Yeah, it looks like it's super technologically advanced industry. But I was not necessarily surprised to come in and say, hey, they're not merging their data together. They're not really doing the analytics, right? Our early, not early, but initial penetration into becoming a data analytics company was our data services. Let's just help them compile their data together, do visualization and dashboarding, help them action on that. The connectivity of the data is not there. The connectivity of the systems to drive the data is not there. Now, I wasn't surprised by that in college. What I am surprised about is in pro, which I expect to be a much more mature infrastructure broadly, we're finding that not to be the case. It's still a soup of vendors that are brought in over the last 10 years that don't speak the same language, that don't connect the data points. You've still got segmented business units where strategy analytics doesn't talk to marketing, and marketing websites don't actually drive data that goes back to strategy analytics. So that was more of my surprise, was in the pro market that I really assumed, high profits, big money flowing through there. I figured they would be much more technologically advanced than they are. Now, some are. Don't get me wrong. Some are very technologically advanced, have deep BI teams that do all the work. They've got really tight infrastructure behind the scenes. But a lot of them, there's a lot they can learn from what we're doing in college. And that's the exciting part. We're driving the innovators in college that have partnered with WMT from the beginning. Those are the leading schools that are thinking about innovation, that are thinking about fan engagement, that are thinking about data first. And what we're doing at those schools is going to drive not only emergent thinking in college, but also some rapid evolution in pro, the way they're thinking about their data, their personalization, their owned and operated ecosystem. So, roundabout way of answering your question, I was not surprised at one side, but surprised another when it came to pro.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, college is so massive too. There's so many people out there, so many schools, and like it makes the pro world look small in comparison in terms of the size of the number of fans, number of people in the database records and all that. And I'm curious too, like especially on the college front, where you have like is there a lot happening on the campus side, you know, away from sports, where they are really focused on, you know, driving donations and driving, you know, capital raises and all that. And a lot of it's happening on the sports side as well, athletic side as well. Like, are those sides talking to each other? Is one side more ahead of the curve than the other? And then also kind of like where I really would like to get an idea of who owns this. And like when it's time to implement a data strategy for athletics, for campus, for the university as a whole, like is it kind of just like people look around like, well, that's you, or are these dedicated roles starting to really emerge? So a multi-part question there that either you can tackle, but you know, college is a very sophisticated space and love to kind of hear how it comes together and where we are today and where we should be going.
I think the college athletic departments are further along than their educational partners, with one exception. Admissions and recruitment of students to campus, they've leaped ahead in terms of, because that's the key business driver. But generally speaking, it falls under a simple premise. The college athletic department's 200 employees, the university environment's 10,000 employees. And so bringing a organized, concise, executable data strategy together on campus on the academic arm is difficult. And the academic arm has some of the same things that a sports department has. The academic arm, the colleges and majors are fighting for the same donors, right? And so there is that, let's just say, healthy competition that exists on the university side. I will say there are some institutions that are doing some incredible stuff in how they recruit students, especially those that are willing to pay to go to campus there. And their college counterparts could learn some things. Second part of the question was what, Neil?
Who drives the innovation? Who drives the system? And what do the org charts look like today? And what kind of maybe should they look like to, in order to drive whatever you want to call it, like college athletics 2.0, 3.0?
That's a great question. Innovation in college is driven by a subset of schools. It is not top down, generally speaking. I believe innovation in college jumps laterally. So when your rival does something that you're interested in, you quickly explore it. FOMO is very real in college. So there's a subset of schools, and we have been fortunate to work with that subset historically. Those that want to own their own path, create the owned and operated business plan, the Clemsons, the LSUs, the Arkansas's, the Miami's. We've been fortunate to work with those folks.
And Chris,
Those that aren't, th those that aren't a step, go ahead, Neil.
Even within the schools themselves, is it like an enterprising SID who's like, I'm gonna take on digital now, or is there an AAD of external or AAD of digital strategy now? Like, what do these org charts look like where you guys know who you should be talking to, or someone comes to you? Like, what do those roles look like, and how many schools are equipped to even implement a forward-looking data strategy?
It was the chief digital officer who was driving the recruitment of fans and the recruitment of student athletes. That has quickly shifted to chief revenue officers. There is a large cohort in college athletics there that are very capable of that. They might be called deputy AD for external, but generally it's the chief revenue officer. That individual has more training than they probably believe, and certainly has more training than some of the search firms they believe. The next generation that's coming in that is bringing new ways and new constructs to look at things is coming from the pro ranks, right? That is the path for ADs, and that is the path for CROs, whether it's in the department or like a Clemson where they've started their own LLC, Kentucky that started their own LLC sidecar business to bring in revenue experts to professionalize what has always been a nonprofit industry.
No, definitely good insight there. It's always I always want to see like who's gonna drive this forward. Who do we go to? Who's gonna raise their hand and say, I am gonna learn the metaverse and figure out how we should fit into wherever that the technology buzzword of the day is, whether it's fleeting or something that's a true paradigm shifter. And I'd love to get your perspective as well, Andy, on how both big picture as well as WMT as a company thinks about innovation and new fan behaviors and new ways to interact with fans, new ways to use data and collect data. Especially coming from a background that you have where you were part of a early LLMs, and now everyone knows what ChatGPT is, obviously. Everyone knows what Claude is. And like as those things emerge, is it around like, okay, this is now a new capability, let's see how we can build on top of it, or there's new fan behavior emerging, or here's a new fan behavior we should be helping to foster because it's a better experience overall? There's a chicken and egg argument there, and I'm curious like how you guys think about it.
So I'll take the first pass at this, and I'd love to get Chris's thoughts too. I'll learn about Chris here. There you go. So I mean, the first thing is, how are we collecting the data, right? The first step in any of this is pulling the data and using our presence as a passive and active data capture mechanism, right? So passively capturing data, how long are fans coming out of the mobile app? Where are they when they're doing it? What is their navigation flow through kind of your digital footprint, right? That's kind of passive data capture, but leveling that up to, AI tagging what content they're looking at, how long are they looking at, building trends and starting to infer and interpret likes and dislikes based on how often fans come back. What is it in context of what else is going on around events, or did something just happen in the game that's driving behavior? So we can start using advanced technology to start interpreting new fan behaviors that are natural to fan, but are very hard to understand in the data unless you've got something constantly looking and kind of beta testing and alpha testing. Hey, is this a new fan behavior we're seeing? So the first part of it is kind of passive active data capture, and how do we use AI to do that effectively? The second is using it on top of our growing fan base for a school to say, hey, are you seeing new segments arrive? Are you seeing new activations? And what are those activations returning back to you? And trying to tie together the data flow again comes down to money, right? How does the data you're capturing drive new dollars found, right? And using it's the benefit of these smart AI agents, right? They're always 24/7 on. They can bring forth new segments that might be arising in the data, even if they're in their infant stage, right? And that's learning. That's education for athletic director to say, are we seeing a trend in fan behavior, right? How do we test this? How do we test this in a real offline environment in a stadium to see if there really is a new segment of fan? Are we seeing new fans come in? Did something happen in the offseason, something happen during season that's driving fan behaviors? That's the kind of thing that you'd have to have a data scientist constantly looking at it, and they're bringing bias to the table. The agents don't have that. They're 24/7 on. They're coming with a relatively, hopefully, unbiased perspective, and they're driving forward ideas to you. It still has to be human in the loop. The humans are still validating, is this concept, this theory that the AI agent brought forward to us, is this valid? But this is what's happening with all the data. But again, it all comes back to the data. The digital experience and the data are so intimately and inherently connected that the digital experience has to be capturing the data. It has to be activating on the data. And that's the way you're learning. It's that round flywheel loop of data flows in, you get new segmentations, you test those segments through new content, new experiences, new outreaches, new polls, all auto-generated. Again, human in the loop, auto-generated. You never want to lose control of your experience, your content, at least for now, until they get super smart. That's the way you kind of continue to build up and speed up that flywheel. And that's where technology is fitting in on the front end, on the back end, and throughout the entire flow of experience to data back to experience.
Chris, go for it. Otherwise, I have like a billion follow-up questions, as expected.
No, keep going. I think you nailed it.
No, I think that was super interesting. I'd love to kind of like you talked about how we're starting to use big data and behavioral data to identify different types of fan behaviors, new fan segments, new fan cohorts. Like, what is the right way to start to think about segmenting fans and segmenting users? Like, is and maybe the old school way would have been like, okay, social demographic and income, and maybe how many games they've been to, or how often they've donated to us, if they don't do this at all, or are they an alumnus of the school? Do they have kids at the school? Like, what are these kind of like more higher level data points and cohorts still the way to go, or are there other more granular things like, okay, this someone it's based on their actual behavior in our app, or it's based on the type of content they watch, or it's based like what kind of these what are new ways to think about segmenting fans you guys are finding?
That is the level of data fidelity that we're able to bring to it, right? It's no longer, I've got my traditionalists, I've got my season ticket holders, I've got my next generation fans or children of alumni fans, right? Now you're layering in their actual behaviors in the digital range, and then even with the mobile app, right? Even their geo presence and where they are when they're doing stuff, right? All that layers into hyper segmentation of those fan bases, maybe creating new fan segments, new fan behaviors, maybe just hyper segmenting those traditional, legacy fan segments. But it's that understanding of, do we have slivers of segments within these general categories? Now, it's never going to move away from, ticketing drives revenue, right? So that's always going to be an overlay of how do we drive more ticketing? How do we drive per cap? How do we, but as these, even in college, right, as these brands become global, right, as they start seeing more opportunity to drive out of market fandom, right, all those online merch opportunities, all that, digital per cap goes up. All through really understanding those fans, understanding how they're accessing the data and where they are when they're doing that. So, not a clear answer to your question, but are they radically different from the fan segments that have existed? Not yet, but they may evolve and change as we move forward. Then there's the next level concept of can you build a clean room across different properties and start looking at trends across properties? And are you seeing fluid fans in college, like you're seeing in pro, right? In pro, that's a lot of the rage slash concern, which is fluid fandom. When you start getting into gamification, when you start getting into betting, when you start getting into fantasy, right? People are becoming fans of the athlete more than fans of the team, right? And that creates a loyalty issue for those teams, especially with emerging fans that are growing up with all this. How does that impact college? College has been steadfast and true. I'm a fan of this college. My dad was a fan of this college. My granddad was a fan of this college. Does fluid fandom start bleeding into that market? That's where you need to start looking at cross-property fandom, cross-property fluidity. Again, we're not there yet, but this is where the whole industry should be going to understand how everyone gains in college as there's more and more movement to the transfer portal and more athlete affinity or college affinity. Where is that line? And we're here to kind of help figure that out and make sure that you're identifying that fluidity early and that you're capturing that revenue within the college partner we have.
So interesting. I want to come back to you in like 10 years and think like, our fans of Drew Mestemaker all of a sudden becoming Oklahoma State fans now, who were previously North Texas fans. Like, is that actually happening? Like we see, like, LeBron stands in NBA, like following from team to team. Just
Exactly.
remains to be seen. And it's super fascinating to figure out. And Chris, I love you touching on your like historical view of this and also what you see today, like of how do we define the value of a fan? What makes a valuable fan? Is it ultimately just dollars and cents, or is there some, long-term value? We know that if a young alumnus, engages this much today, that when they have a lot more disposable income, they're going to be more likely to donate to us in the future. Is it a is money the dollar signs, like what we can, is the closest proxy we have to value? Are there other things that we value that maybe we should put other weights on, like how frequently they engage with us, how much content they're watching, are they likely to evangelize us and, suggest to their friends and family, let's go to the game tonight? How do you define a valuable fan, and how has that kind of evolved, especially in today, and where we can track all these micro activities?
That's a great question. Your most valuable fan's still that 64-year-old that cut you a big check, right? On the other end of the spectrum, you got a 14-year-old that's probably never opened an email before or sent a properly written email before, at least. And for all these athletic departments and the way that sport is being consumed in a million different ways, the bill is coming due. So I think what's exciting about the era we're in, the exciting about AI, exciting about where data can inform the decision making, is you can have a path for all of these fans. None of them are more important than the other. The 64-year-old's going to deliver more revenue right now for a lot of reasons. But the ability to normalize your data and deliver a personalized experience that speaks to a bunch of different demographics and understand where you're having success and continue to test against that, that's very real and is not far off in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about where we can go eventually with predictive metrics. And I mean, 5, 6, 10 years ago, even we were thinking about like, how do you get the young alumnus to start, becoming engaged early on? And, hats up to Clemson with the IPTE, was a really good way to start to get some of those involved, or young alumni ticket packages, or let alone to your point, like the 14-year-old who might, want to apply to the school in the future. And that could become, a full tuition paying student. And so thinking about how like Something that happens today might not drive a dollar today, but could drive thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions in the future, and have that true lifetime value, I guess, as well. Just super interesting to think about that kind of aspect. And like I know we're talking around a lot how this data gets captured, and I kind of want to hear like how you engineer the opportunities to capture data. I mean, some of it's just going to be organic activities, like I'm going to a game, therefore I'm going to maybe look up tickets and figure out how I'm going to buy maybe merchandise or buy some food as well. But like, how else can we think about driving experiences that can capture relevant data? Like, is it around like making sure we have content experiences and having some on-demand content, live content? I know early on when we were like really early days of social media data capture, it was like, all the various Quizlets, like which player are you most like? Take this quiz, and we'll use your Facebook SSO or SDK to be able to capture your data that way, and then we can track you everywhere else you go. Loyalty programs have had undulating times of popularity. Now they're definitely back in the fold because they're so valuable first party data. So like, what are the avenues to collect data, and how much of it is just organic, everyday activity, and how much can be contrived and really, operationalize and strategize in a clever way?
Which one of us is taking that one, Andy?
Because I'll let you take that one to start when you talk about kind of how we view our partner framework and how we view kind of a data first approach towards partners.
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about like chronologically, right, Neil? So foundational inputs, your ticketing, your commerce, your Fanatics or retail. Then the unique commerce driving that every institution has five folks in there. Could be at least five folks, could be loyalty, could be SMS platforms or experience type platforms, upsell type platforms. And then the third phase is where Andy and I and our CTO are getting really excited about some of the things we're seeing is like, well, what are the new data sets that haven't been introduced to sports that we can bring in alongside the foundational and the unique for each institution? We've always been nimble in integrating those first two sets. The exciting part that I can't wait to get to is like bringing in some really unique data sets. And when we come back on this, we'll talk to you about some of those that we've discovered. Where does it go? I think it starts really with where the expertise of the team you're working with is. We were on a call with a client recently, and we brainstormed in 30 seconds the 12 channels that they would want to distribute messaging to their fan base through, right? Some of those are owned and operated, components of our website, components of our mobile app, push notifications. Some of those are the traditional, right? Where you automatically think TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Are they really good at text message or are they not doing that? Are they really into email or are they worn out by the email drip campaigns? So lean into the strengths of the department and where there's expertise, allow the data to show you what's successful. And ideally, what Andy and I think is going to come, or maybe believe is going to come, is that data is also going to tell you where you need to go next, which channel you need to go next to execute on the goals you're trying to deliver for your team.
Super interesting. And Andy, feel free to comment. Otherwise, I have certainly plenty of follow-ups as well, of course.
Nope, no, Chris nailed it as usual.
And I'm thinking about how like a lot of those user elements can start to intersect and cross over a bit as well. And so like someone who is really receptive to SMS, like may be more or less likely to also be receptive to social media, advertising or whatever it might be. And like, are you ultimately like, how are you tracking these users across the various ecosystems? Like, and I'm sure it's maybe not a catch-all answer, but is there a really big push to have a user have a reason to quote unquote sign in? We see these bigger NBA ID is one of the examples out there. Blockchain was once seen as maybe an opportunity to have like that fan identity that could travel across the world, and email and phone number were and still are in many ways identifier. So device ID for someone who's maybe on your app who isn't signed in. Like, how can you identify the user across the various, I guess, services and areas that they're going to be interacting with you all?
Yeah, that's what our fan ID layer will do, right? It's going to connect their owned and operated platforms where you have Clemson's been one we've talked about today, right? 8 million unique viewers, visitors on an annual basis, and a database of season ticket holders. It's around 80,000. The ticketing database, it's, I think, last count, about 800,000. That's a big delta in between
Wow.
all of those numbers. And so if we every single day when the CRO gets into his office and he can go in a dashboard and see how many new fans they added and how many profiles were updated in the last 24 hours, that is very, very powerful. The motivation for that, again, is a bit of in the strengths of the athletic department. That's where we've built a nimble platform. So is it gamification? Is it loyalty? Is it gated content? Yes. Is it signing in to get access so you don't have to sign into all your other accounts every single time you want to access something that's part of your fandom? Yes. Are any of those the magic bullet? No, because that's the space we live in, right? We all live in our own channels and have our own preferred preferences. But what we have built in our ecosystem, and it all funneling in from fan ID into fan intelligence and being bilateral, right? And communicating with those systems both ways. So we understand that the actions worked and we can update the profile in the system. All of that is towards those outcomes we talked about at the top, right? Like, how do we get more identification? How do we make the experience motivating for the fan, seamless for the fan, and get them to come back and continue to share with the team that they're already passionate about?
And that give and take is really evolving too, where like fans now understand more than ever if they're gonna they recognize that if I give you more data, I'm gonna get a better experience back. And that's just like the paradigm that we live in now, and for a good for good. Go ahead, Eddie.
Just to add on top of that a little bit is one of the consistent challenges that a lot of industries will have is how to recapture the owned and operated ecosystem. Social media was such a platform to engage fans, to get visibility, to drive exposure of whatever it is. And sports is just like every other vertical that leverage social media to get their message out, to get fans, to drive activity, whatever it was. It's outside your system. You're losing all that data. You're losing all that visibility. You're losing all that monetization, right? So the content strategies that we're working on with some of the leading innovators is you still have to use that social media reach, but how do you drive that back into your own and operated ecosystem? How do you preserve some of that unique content? Use social media as a tease to drive back into your digital ecosystem. So you're getting that data, you're getting those eyeballs, you're getting those dollars. And that's a somewhat of a paradigm shift we're seeing early on, which is how you develop the content strategy, not to activate fully through social media, but to have that boomerang of use social media and activate back into your network. So you're getting all that data and dollars.
Now that is the tremendous insight of as we've seen O&O kind of have a resurgence of, okay, maybe we should care if fans are interacting with us on platforms where we can recognize them and know them and get to know them, versus just on living on rented real estate and not knowing who's really engaging with it. We got a million likes on this post, but we don't know who the hell liked it, or why they liked it, if they know who we are, what country, maybe we know what country they're in. It's just
Exactly.
that,
But
and
Meta
then
does, and Meta's making money off
yeah,
that, but you're
exactly.
not.
And I love what you brought up as well around, because I've had some conversations on this podcast over the years, whether it's thinking about, let's like I talked with a fellow from UConn around how they put some of their stuff on YouTube, but then try to drive back to the Plus platform for more behind the paywall premium stuff. And the same thing we said around thinking about social media as that top of funnel, and then convert them to somewhere on O&O, whether it's exclusive content or better experiences or access to an on-demand library, whatever it might be. And
There
that's
might
the
be.
kind of stuff that I'm fascinated by, of what is the value prop that gets fans off of that social media platform, or at least it becomes part of the way they interact with your organization, because that's how you get to know them a little bit more.
And I think that's, Neil, the answer is that's the riddle that's yet to be solved, right? It's that how do you get the that addiction of social media, right? How do you get them to translate off that platform back to an operating ecosystem? It is going to be about next generation content strategies, about that interactive experience, about you understanding the fan. So you're going to get that experience in the O&O environment versus the generalized social media experience you've got across all of your different likes and dislikes. So it is something that it's going to have to continue to evolve, and that, that partnership with social media is going to have to involve on a, data bridge in, data bridge out model that hasn't been fully solved yet, because there, that has been the methodology is drive to social. It's so much reach on social. So how do you revert that now? It's going to take time, But that's where we're trying to work with our partners. Again, it's about the technology, it's about the data, it's about the content, it's about the strategy of all of it working together to drive engagement, personalization, identification, all within the O&O system.
Scummers Love here with Andy Zielman and Chris Fried of WMT Digital. I'm geeking out. This is right up my alley. And I mean, heck, I just shared on LinkedIn today like a BCG study that was really like trying to think about like the known fan is worth more than the unknown fan. And it seems like of course, but we are so seduced by these big numbers on social, like, oh, we reached 1 million people. But you know what? It's better if you reach 100,000 people that you if you know who they are, you have their email and know more about them, and they're in your database. And you know, I'm using some like just random numbers, obviously, but you're just recognizing that the known fan is worth more than the unknown fan. And that's really what we should be thinking about is how do we grow our fan base is not how do we grow our followers necessarily. You know, it's part of the funnel, but it's not the conversion point that you need to get them to. I'd love to finish up with a shareable stat of just thinking about when maybe a little both of where schools can start on the college front, as well as how you guys approach a new partner, a new client. Like, what are some of the questions that we should be asking? Where are the like, how do you get those early small wins so you get everyone bought in and being like, okay, maybe we should listen and maybe we should you know change. Inertia is a strong drug, especially in the college game, where you have some people who have been there for decades doing things and stuff hasn't changed that much for their workflow, or at least they haven't wanted to change over the years. And so, like, how do you approach a greenfield opportunity and say these are the questions that we should be asking, and how do you start with those early where those early wins tend to come?
We've always been solution sellers. We want to understand where the pain is and where the opportunity is. If you ask the right questions, they will tell you everything. We have had success by solving that pain and building platforms towards what our clients want. And we've expanded that relationship or renewed that relationship by being consultative once we land that first agreement with them. That first agreement could be two or three different pieces of technology, could be one. But where we've won is continuing to be consultative and helping show them opportunities or point them in the direction of need over the long term. And that's how a BYU goes from one agreement to six or seven right now, with one of the most interesting brands out there and one of the most opportunistic brands in a niche that is college sports, where they are the niche of the niche in college sports for sure.
Do colleges know what they don't know? Like, do they come to you guys and being like, or like, hey, we know we should be doing, we know we're not like, you know, leading a leading pack or on the bleeding edge of things. Tell us what we should know. Or do they come to you like kind of having done their homework? Maybe they ask ChatGPT, like, what are we doing? How, you know, help me improve my strategy. Like, how much of their information asymmetry is there, and what's kind of moving that first mover you know opportunity?
That's been the biggest blessing and challenge for us in my 5 years here. Andres is a genius. And early on in the company, everybody had access to Andres. And I've often said our challenge in growth is how do we represent his brain to our clients and continue to be on the front foot, forward leading with our clients. We're in that process of adjusting, and Andy and I are in the thick of it of our clients to guide them to the optimal decisions. Andy, I'll let you add anything else you want to add there.
Yeah, I mean, I think might be a broken record in this, Neil, but a lot of it comes back to innovation is a critical part, and Andres brings that tenfold, right? How are we going to solve the problems with technology in an efficient way that drives value? But it comes down to the end of data and dollars, right? So when we go into organizations, and there's a huge variety, you know this, right? There are some that are, thinking critically about their own processes and strategies, and they come to us and say, like, help us figure out where technology is going, how we can use technology and innovation to drive a new strategy. Some are, stuck in the mud, right? Like, I don't want to lose my staff. And if we talk about innovation, that's going to cut into my staff, right? So let's not talk about, that stuff over there, because I don't want to lose the 10 people that I've got doing manual ticket pricing. I'll use that as an example, right? So you have to read the clients in that, but it all comes down to how are you monetizing your digital channel? How are you creating the experience that are driving your fans back into that digital channel? And, if you're talking to folks that are thinking that way about driving top line and possibly at the same time accelerating bottom line by cost efficiency through technology, then you've got the hook. But if you're talking to somebody who's trying to protect their spend, then you lean in hard on how do we drive, monetization for you and make it easier for your people to be more effective and do more with the same spend you have.
I'll add one thing on there, Neil. In this chief strategy officer role over the last year, it's okay to say, I don't know the answer to that and connect to really smart business partners. They may not even be a partner, really smart consultants, really smart businesses that we've come across. There's been, if you deliver a prospect or a client to the correct answer as efficiently as possible when it's out of your purview, which a lot of NIL has been out of our purview purposefully because it's so unsettled. There's oftentimes equal benefit to that. They're like, hey, these guys aren't just going to try to sell me something because I called them with a pain point.
No, it's a great call out. And to your point earlier, Chris, too, as well, like once someone leaves the pack, it's very much a follow the leader, type industry. And they're like, oh, that school's doing it, or God forbid, our rival school, whatever. If Florida's doing something that Miami's not, or whoever else it might be, that's an easy way to drive some action, that FOMO as well. I want to close out with Crystal Show with that, and with kind of both a forward looking. I want to kind of put you guys on the spot as they kind of think about like where fan engagement is going and what we can be looking out for. But like we can frame that a little bit around like how you guys think about the rapid emergence every day of newer technologies, like when LLMs continue to get better and better, when something like a Claude Cowork comes out, or Open Claw, whatever it might be, is that like, are you guys looking to those things and being like, okay, that's something new that didn't exist in the technical paradigm before. How can we leverage that to improve our outcomes for our clients, or leverage that technology? And so like both in terms of like how you guys think about adopting these newer technologies, this stuff just happens so rapidly thanks to the hundreds of billions of dollars being invested in these companies, as well as where the space can go, like from a greenfield perspective.
So I'll take that first. Having been around the block in the tech industry, right? AI has been talked about for a long time. Like this time it's real. Like everyone knows it, right? There are advancements happening at such a rate now that AI is no longer a buzzword. It is fundamentally transformational for every business right now, which I think is now everyone realized that even just in the last 6 months. 6 months ago, people would argue it's not real. Now everyone's adopting it and putting it to work. Our job is, how do we leverage that to drive the best outcomes for our partner through our technology? How do we demystify AI for some of our partners who don't want to adopt new technologies? And that's one thing that, this company's done very well. It is a trusted brand in digital college sports, right? And everything that Andres and the team have built is mission-critical enterprise-grade software that has data privacy at the center of it, right? So when you're talking about implementing large language models, when you're talking about using AI in a platform, that can scare the heck out of a lot of people, where they say, what does that mean? What does this mean for my data? Am I losing control? All that stuff is, Chris said earlier, solution selling, consultative, right? We are looking at our partners' long-term viability and growth of value through our platform. Not looking to do a quick win. Our contracts relationship with our partners are, some are decade long, right? So we are looking to evolve with our partners over a very long-term horizon, bringing technology to bear, but at the pace of their comfort as well, because we're not looking to, do a deal and move on. So the transformation of AI is both, it's a huge opportunity for us to bring more value, to bring more insights readily, to use it for our own cost efficiencies internally, to optimize processes, but also to bring those forward to our partners as being a leading edge technology company of how are we using this even internally for our operational processes to educate them? Because that's the value we bring. It's bigger than the technology. It's that partnership we developed over a decade plus with some of our partners.
This is a balance too of technology for technology's sake, and like everyone wants that headline, like look at us, look how we're using AI. But then you see the recent headlines around like Uber is questioning like, are we spending more money on AI than it's actually saving us? And so you have to like think about those things. That's where your consultation come into play of like, let's figure out like what's this actually doing. And like, yes, you want to be a bleeding edge and all that, and we will be. But it's not just technology for technology's sake. Like, there's got to be an outcome and a reason that we're going for, and the data, the bring it all full circle. The data has to back it up, and the data and dollars.
Correct. And that's, very much Andreas's view on rapid development. It's intentional innovation, right? It's not innovation for the sake of innovation. It's not jumping the bandwagon. It's intentional innovation. And that's, I think, a huge as to why we are the company we are and why we've been able to be the premium digital brand in college sports for so long.
I absolutely love intentional innovation. That's going to stick with me for years to come, I think.
There you
That's
go.
a great guiding point. This was so much fun, guys. We're going to have some more fun with you. Our quick hitters coming up shortly. But
Great.
first, let's do a shareable stat coming up right now. Just fantastic stuff with Andy and Chris from WMT. Just could really pick those guys' brains all day. And I learn a lot from just seeing what they're doing with their clients in the industry and continuing to think about how they're pushing the envelope, how they're continuing to think about fan engagement, fan cohorts, using data to drive, revenue generating programs and decision making and going getting smarter, making the industry smarter by going beyond just the old segments and cohorts and classic spreadsheets of yesteryear and to really truly, data rich. Big data, organized, clean, structured, actionable. Just lots of good stuff there. But stick around because in our quick hitter segment, you'll hear a lot more and learn a lot more and some fun anecdotes, some fun insights. So stick around for that. But first episode's a shareable stat. This little shareable stat comes from a recent video shared by the Anaheim Ducks. I shared about this on LinkedIn. I've been posting about it elsewhere on Twitter as well. And the shareable stat is 40 million. That is an approximate number, but it's about right looking at the latest stats. 40 million views of the video of them basically taking down their ice sheet at the Honda Center where they play at Honda Center for the after the end of the season. 40 million views. And why? Well, because it's showing the behind the scenes of showing that sort of dirty work, how it gets made type aspect, as well as I think the aha, the like revelation that people were surprised to see that the postseason logos on the ice were not painted on. They were just really big stickers, essentially. And I think that surprised a lot of people, which led to even more viral reach. But, around 33 million or so across TikTok and Instagram, about half and half on those platforms. Also, big metrics on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook as well. Just such good stuff there, and so many good insights that you can think about and take action on. I think by now, if you are listening to or watching this podcast, you know that behind the scenes, operations, how it works. How it really happens, dirty jobs types content does tend to perform very, very well. But how do you get more out of it? The Ducks, as well as a recent similar video from the NBA, used sort of an ASMR treatment, really turning up the sound design and the audio to give that an extra layer to it, showing some of that aha, that crazy stuff, and showing some people's reactions to it. The NBA did that with their recent How the Court Gets Made video before the NBA final, showing a player saying, "I thought the logo on the court was a sticker, but it was painted on." Kind of the opposite of the Anaheim Ducks in the hockey video as well. But also something that I think we've seen some conversation around is how do you ultimately get more value out of this and monetize this? Yes, you're reaching a big broad audience, oftentimes well beyond your sports fan audience, especially on those TikTok or Instagram feeds where you're reaching just a much more broad audience that just likes to see oddly interesting stuff and extraordinary things. But how do you then turn that into whether that means getting fans in your funnel or at least driving some sort of revenue opportunities? And I think working with your partnerships and sponsorship team to really plan ahead of these things and say, hey, we know this content performs, we have predictable metrics that this is going to perform. Let's see if we can package it with a partner, especially there's plenty of relevant partners, whether it's working in logistics or a big hardware construction, just lots of opportunities there if you really put your minds together. And I know my buddy Alex Coplo with SponCon Sports, talked about this as well. And also think about how can you reuse this content? When content like this really, really hits, that means there's opportunities to post it again, repackage it, repost it a month from now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. Good content will perform again and again. And as many as 40 million people saw this, or at least, maybe not 40 million unique, but 40 million views of this content. In this case, there are millions and millions of more who did not see this content that would likely enjoy it as well. So think about how you can continue to reuse that same content, and also think about how you can use it on your own and operated. Not all your biggest fans are following everything you post on social. Maybe a friend or a family member texts this to them or posts or shares with them in a DM. But how can you use this cool content on your website, on your SMS, on your email, giving fans value there as well? So it's not just always a marketing channel. So a lot to take away from this. Again, overall, just tremendous content and really cool to see it take off. And definitely seeing more and more of this cool content take off as well. So that shareable stat again, one more time. 40 million views. 40 million. That is insane. Of the Ducks, you know, basically taking down their ice sheet for the after the end of the season. So that's the Joe Sherwell stat, but more importantly, stick around because more good stuff coming with Andy Zielman and Chris Freet of WMT Digital. Right back to this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Andy Zielman and Chris Freet. Andy's the president, and Chris is the EVP and Chief Strategy Officer of WMT Digital. You guys just got schooled on data and business strategy and driving revenue in the college athletics world, but well beyond the pro sports world, entertainment, fan engagement, all that fun stuff. But now we are going to have some quick hitters. So, Chris, Andy, are you guys ready?
Bring it.
I think so.
All right. Number one, I want to hear answers from both of you, but we'll start with Chris. Tell us about a non-sports WMT client, if there's one worth calling out that did something interesting that the sports can adapt or learn from. So, what do you guys learn from the non-sports world?
Yeah, Cirque du Soleil, this is recency bias a bit, but they're also a fascinating client. I was just up in Montreal with them. They use our AI ticketing intelligence to price and dynamically distribute all of their tickets across most of their Cirque properties. What's most interesting, and I think sports can learn from, is they also now have affiliated properties like Blue Man Group and Paw Patrol, The Illusionist, that they're taking their sensibility and applying it to those acts and brands that we all know that are, tried and true entertainment values.
That is awesome. Yeah, I think I even heard someone from the Cirque Group at the recent Peak conference talking about how they're using AI for ticketing. And now I know WMT is the technology underlying that. That's awesome.
I'm going to go a different direction. So I don't play mobile app games very often, but there's one that I go to that it's kind of sports. So I'm going to kind of cheat in here, Neil. But there's one that I go to and I'm like, got a moment when my kids aren't yelling at me. And it's this tennis game. And what gets me about it is not how addictive it is, but the opportunities they're missing, right? Like, it's not getting my data. They're not sponsoring all the assets in this game. Like, they're working off of some pure subscription model, but they're missing so many opportunities there. That's what we think about 24/7 is, right? How do you capture data from your fans engaging with your app in the sports space? How do you create monetization opportunities through sponsorship, through advertising? And there's none of that in this game. It's great. It's addictive, but how much they're missing informs how big the opportunity is for those partners of ours that are thinking about that first, capturing data, delivering the experience, and monetizing those assets effectively. So it's great for me to pass the time. It also informs me of how big the pie is that we're going after.
That's so great. I mean, there's got to be so many opportunities where, like, if someone is spending a lot of time doing something and you're not, understanding, you're not capturing that data of the fan doing that or of the user doing that, let alone, like, that should, mean there's opportunity there. And I love being able to hone in on that. Number two, this one is directed for you, Chris. Tell me, going back to your time at Miami, the most memorable campaign or activation from your time with the Canes.
This is an easy question. This is the origin story of WMT. The Canes were Andres Fossil and WMT's first client. It was a trial period on SEO. We were winning basketball championships or on our way to winning basketball championships. And through the good work of Andres and some of the engineers that are still here today, 14 years later, we were able to kick the Miami Heat and LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade off the first page of Google for basketball tickets.
That is freaking awesome. Is how real is the AEO conversation or GEO conversation, right? Whichever acronym you want to use. Like, we talk about SEO. Is AEO really, is it overrated, underrated, properly rated?
When I give you my shout out later, I will tell you it's overrated, but I'm going to guess it's probably properly rated at the moment. My own individual search and querying and curiosity is heavily skewed towards AI in the last 9 months.
Now I'm curious to go after this of like, hey, I got a night to spend in Miami next year. Which team should I go see? I want to ask ChatGPT that. Number three, Andy, I want to go back to your time with the FBI. I mean, we could have a whole separate episode just with all those stories. Just tell me, like, what's an experience or an insight or something that you took away from your time there that really sticks with you?
I could spend a lot of time talking about what I learned in that, how I translate that back to the private sector. I think the thing that fundamentally sticks with me is the FBI is a foundational team organization, right? You have individuals that do their great things, but it's a collective team, right? Collected on a mission, collected on doing what they do, and bringing that back to the private sector, right? When you're building a successful company, and Neil, you talked about, the depth of talent on the WMT team, and that's the way this company is built. It's built on a connected culture, a connected mission we're delivering on. It's about finding the right pieces of the puzzle that together are complementary to each other versus having redundancy. And it's about finding that, that cultural integration between people, that personality integration, but that skill integration, right? Like Chris and I share a lot of similarities in the way we think about problems, the way we talk about problems, the way we solve riddles. We share a lot of differences in how we approach those problems, how we do discovery, how we follow up on those problems, how we digest and analyze those problems. Same thing goes to our CTO, our COO, Andres, our chief marketing officer. Like down the chain, it's a really, really well-constructed team of various skills that all have a very central ethical foundation on which to run business and treat other people. And that's the thing I brought back most is that single individuals will never be successful in a corporation. It has to be about the collective team. And that's the way the FBI runs. When you go into a dangerous operation, the first thing you do is you sit down with your team. You understand exactly what everyone's skill set is. Everyone's got basic defensive skills, basic military skills, basic, an investigative interrogation skills, all the things you learn to get in there. But there's one guy that was a sniper in Afghanistan, right? Like when stuff goes down, he's going to take over, right? There's one guy who, came from frontline police. He's going to be the one that if things go wrong in that room, he's going to take care of that, right? And there are guys like me that didn't have that background, but brought other skills around how to ask the right questions, how to do discovery, how to build those relationships in a room when you're trying to understand the situation. So the team has to be constructed in a way that makes sense to achieve the goal you're trying to deliver on. And WMT is very much structured that way.
What a tremendous insight. I freaking love that. It makes me think recently that, with the Winter Olympics, there was all the talk around USA men's hockey around like, you didn't take this player is so much better than this player, but they were building a team and everyone has a role to play. And it's not just taking, the all the alphas, they fit together in the right way. And so I love that insight. That's freaking awesome. Number four, Chris, you're on, I think you're on the steering committee still for SEAT, and you've spent a lot of time at the SEAT conference over the years, one of the better sports and technology conferences out there, the best sports technology conference out there, among the many sports conferences. So tell me the most memorable panel or presentation that you saw, you've seen at a SEAT conference, also the most interesting person that you've met.
Two panels. When SEAT was in Miami and I was working at Miami, we brought in the president, Donna Shalala, and she just went completely unscripted and crushed it. Which those that worked around Donna wouldn't be surprised, right? She's had many successful careers in a bunch of different verticals. Last year, Clemson came in and gave a tutorial on what it's like to host the Savannah Bananas,
Oh,
which
wow.
was, I think, the largest attended case study because it was very practical. And at that exact time, the Bananas were out fielding bids for the next round of hosting events. And then person that it's not a person, it's what's great about the conference is it's a community. I was just telling Amy Darnell on our team, like, hey, this is the one conference I can go to that I can get you to anybody that's on the attendee list in one introduction. It's really tight-knit. There's friends, colleagues, administrators, leaders in sports, competitors that I have a ton of respect for that have been going to that thing for 10 years, and that's the value of that conference.
It truly is a great family, and it grows, and it's so much good conversation there, so much good knowledge shared. That's a great call. It's on the panels too. I kind of want to track down that Savannah Man's panel now if I can, and watch it. That's awesome. Number five, I want to go back to you, Annie. This is one I'm super interested to hear this one, because I've been at multiple startups now, and you kind of see different sides of it. And so I want to know, like, how technical should a software company leader be? You see, sometimes the CEO or the president is very technical, and they are, came up coding or came up on the tech side and know everything there is to know about front end, back end, UI, UX, whatever it might be. And then more of the sales and marketing and partnerships and revenue focus side. And there's no right or answer here, but from your experience, how technical do you think a software leader should be?
So I'm just going to go back to my comment earlier around constructing the right team, right? As long as you've got respect among the team of leadership, it's not a top-down organization, it is a servant leader, model system, then I think the leader, there's not a leader, it is a combination of leaders that are making decisions together, right? So Andres is highly technical. He's also happened to be really good at business and really personable and all the other things that I'm jealous of, but he has to be highly technical. I'm not, right? I am buzzword fluent in technology, right? I mean, I can say the right things, get through the first conversation, and people ask me questions. I go, I don't know. Run for the hills. But that's never been my skill, right? My skill is being able to, bring together teams, know enough to be able to bring teams together. And I think that's my take on that, is that when you have top-down organizations that are led by someone who's a sales guy, you're gonna have a sales-driven culture. It's not gonna have the product and technology to deliver on the sales, right? If you have a finance lead, it's gotta be a hyper-efficient budget, but you're not delivering growth and innovation. When you have a pure technology lead, which again, Andres doesn't fall into this category, but it's gotta be innovation for the sake of innovation, not innovation to drive value, right? So we've built an organization that is multiple leaders that work together to drive forward. So I don't think, if you have a single leader, they need to have a strong CTO, but I don't believe that successful companies have a single leader. I think they've got a combination of effective leaders that work well together.
Great way to put it. Great insight there, and I think you're spot on. I mean, you need to be a leader, and have someone that, where you are truly all do work together. It's not a dictatorship where someone's making all the calls and doesn't know about this side of the business, this side of the business, or whatever. It's all working together.
Humility and self-awareness is an underrated strength of leaders, and I think we've got that across our entire leadership team.
All right, Chris, I want to bounce back to your college times. We can run through this quickly because you have a lot of college stops as you explaining your career path. So tell me, first I want to know the most memorable games from each of your campus stops. So Oklahoma, Arkansas, KU, and Miami. And then a bonus question, because I you went to UCSB and I spent some time in Del Playa, Isla Vista. Maybe people know, if you know. What was Halloween like at UCSB, especially on Del Playa? So most memorable games from each of your campus stops and Halloween at UCSB.
All right, I'm starting with Halloween at UCSB because Facebook and MySpace weren't out, and so I'm very fortunate. And I'm not going to talk at all about what Halloween was like at UCSB. You just got to go experience it. I'm just glad it's not on the internet anywhere.
Tremendous.
Oklahoma Big 12 Championship in women's basketball when we beat Baylor.
Nice.
They were running a hack a shack against Courtney Paris, and our coaches were super frustrated because they would make a bucket and foul her before the ball was even inbounded. And so I said, just have her start inbounding the ball. It was the one time I got to talk strategy in game. At the U basketball that season I talked about, where we started working with Andres and WMT. We played UNC for the ACC championship in Greensboro. It was an absolute track meet, the fastest basketball game I have ever seen by like 25%. I could not believe how fast the two teams were playing.
Well,
Arkansas, I was not at the game. My daughter was born during the Ole Miss game,
wow.
where Joe Tessitore said this famous line that lives in Razorback lore: "The stadium is literally shaking underneath my feet. The crowd is so loud." South Florida, we became number two in the country because we beat West Virginia. And I came into the office that Monday after, and there I was one of only two people in the athletic department that had ever been ranked in the top 10 and working for a college football team. So it was very unique because I was coming from Oklahoma. And I was like, enjoy this. This is the fun thing. And then the last one, Kansas basketball, my first year there against Vermont. What would be a very nondescript game for anybody else was my first realization of how powerful Allen Fieldhouse is as a home venue. It was the loudest basketball game I had ever been to. And it was simply because the player's last name was Vic. He hit eight threes. He was on an absolute heater, and the place was going bonkers. They were up 22 points. The outcome was already defined, but I was like, holy smokes, this place is different. And that still obviously very much remains.
That's awesome. I mean, Allen Fieldhouse is definitely on my bucket list, and there's a reason that Kansas never loses on Big Monday, because
Seriously, yeah.
it's crazy. Next one for Andy, coming down the wire here with our quick hitters with Andy and Chris from WMT Digital. Tell me the app or software, whatever how you want to characterize it, that you use, it's most useful for your job, and why. Like, nothing obvious like Slack or email. Like, what's kind of an app or piece of software that you found is kind of like maybe a secret weapon for you, or maybe not so secret weapon?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious answer here is what these large language models can do. I mean, we use Claude internally. I mean, it's revolutionary, what you can do with these prompt-based large language models right now, and especially with computer and doing all sorts. I mean, that's the obvious answer now. There's never been anything like this in my time in technology or professional life, where you're seeing just rapid elevation of what a single person can do using technology. But
Right.
outside that, my answer is going to be this thing, the phone, right? The more we've gone to digital and we've gone to Slack and we've gone to asynchronous communication, the more important this thing is to understand tone, to understand context, to have that back and forth riff with someone you respect. So
Yeah.
to me, the phone has become the app of relevance now, as we've moved everything to asynchronous digital. I mean, we're a remote company, so we operate on these screens and on Slack all the time. But until you pick up the phone, have a one-on-one conversation with somebody, driving back and forth to your home, driving to get coffee, sitting outside your office, sitting in your family room if you're working from home, that's where you start getting to know people and you start getting rich insights, and you just don't get it any other way. These are constructed, virtual meetings. Asynchronous communication is to get a task done. This is about connectivity in an increasingly disconnected world. So I'm going to say the phone.
That's I really love that. I mean, the art of conversation and actually going back and forth with somebody in a synchronous manner. Like, there's so much to that, and having small talk, having the opportunity to get to know people and develop relationships, so important. I'm a remote company as well, and that those things matter so much. Like, talking about what TV show you're binging recently or whatever it might be. It's not always around work. You develop those relationships. So I love that call out, especially as things become more removed from that, and it's just text messages or whatnot.
Funny, because it is a basic thing, but it's not considered basic anymore because people never use it. So, except for
Seriously.
cameras.
All right, guys, time for our food question. Always ask a food question. It's my favorite question that we ask on this episode, or on the show rather, for both of you. So we'll start with you, Andy, and then Chris as well. Andy, tell me the best meal to get out there in Boston and where to get it. And then Chris, tell me the best meal to get in Nashville, and also the most notable college town food from your career in the college world. So Andy, let's start out with the greater Boston area. What's the best meal to get, and where are we getting it?
So I'm going to give you a region, not a specific restaurant, but get north of the city into Cape Ann onto the Gloucester Rockport, which is the tip of Cape Ann. It's the lesser Cape of, Cape Cod gets all the press, but Cape Ann, working fishing village, Gloucester, you get fish right off the boat. There are tons of restaurants right along the water where literally the boats come in, unload the fish, it goes right into the kitchen. Like, that is where you want to be to really understand what it's like to be a coastal community that's driving really, really fresh output and fresh fish. So come north, come to Gloucester, go to Rockport. There's 1,000 restaurants that are all picking up fresh fish right off the boat.
I like that. I'm so used to hearing people in Boston talk about, like, go get some Italian food or whatever in the North End, and to hear see here's a seafood or whatever. Boston underrated as a seafood destination, I think, for sure. That's a great
I
one.
happen to work in Gloucester and I can literally smell the fish right now through my
Lucky
oven. So it's I love it,
right
but maybe that's just me. So
there. Chris, how about you out there in the Nashville area, as well as your favorite college town food?
yeah, Nashville, I'll go with two that are not the common fare right now, barbecue or steakhouses, which there's plenty of in Nashville. There's a company or there's a restaurant called Bad Idea that's French and Laotian cuisine mixed. It's fantastic. Be ready for some spicy food. And then there's a pasta restaurant called Rolf and Daughters that is like super innovative. And you always try something there that's very traditional and wows you, and something that's completely innovative. And you're like, wow, you eat way too much pasta, too many carbs for sure. Arkansas and Fayetteville, Northwest Arkansas is just totally underrated. And it's funny because it's because of the impact of Walmart and J.B. Hunt and Tyson Foods, three of the largest companies in the United States, all in this tiny little hamlet that is Arkansas. And all the money that those companies and their foundations pour into that community, you can get five-star meals, you can get James Beard meals, and you can find great taco trucks. So you're not going to go wrong between Bentonville and Fayetteville.
Nice. And the Hog students can afford that?
Yeah, they stay on the bar strip. There's plenty there for them.
Last one to get you guys out of here. This is meant to be fun and forward looking. If we look ahead 25 years, I'm purposely choosing a ridiculous number because there's no way we will know what this looks like in 25 years. But give me your boldest prediction or hope about sports fan engagement or experience 25 years to the future. Like, again, impossible to predict, but what's something that's just out there, pie in the sky type thing that you have, that you may have in mind or predict? Go for it. Whoever wants to go first. Andy, yeah,
Andy's
looks like
going
you got something
first.
in mind.
Sure. So you try to think about what is the construct of sports in 25 years, right? Like, is it even physical anymore, right? Like, where you're taking out the risk? Is it mental? Is it, I don't know, right? But that's what you're going to start seeing is, is the fan participating in some ways, right? It's all going to be, again, it's going to be augmented. It's going to be about some form of digital augmentation with whatever's happening on the field. If that field's remote, if that field is virtual, if that field is actual. I hope we never get away from, the incredibleness of what the human athlete, the human body can do, right? I mean, everything we experience is look at what that person can do with the same general body shape I have, right? And it's just unbelievable. So I hope we stay within the physical construct, but how is the fan going to be engaging? I mean, they're going to be, you could have chips embedded in the athlete's head, so you're part of the action. You feel the hit. Like, it could be that level a lot sooner than 25 years from now, but it's going to be that fully immersive experience in the physical world, I think, is going to be where we're going to be. And that it's going to be, I mean, we'll be leading it, of course, whatever
Naturally.
it is, but naturally, but it's going to be, it's going to be amazing.
Wild thing about. All right, Chris, put on your hat. Bring your
I'll
Tinfoil
build
hat.
on that a little bit. I think super bullish on Cosm and Sphere type experiences that are familiar. You're viewing something that's familiar in a totally new way that feels far more immersive. Plugging in all the other technologies that goes along with that, but still getting there physically. I think that's where we will be in 25 years. Who knows what the technology that you, the seat you sit in and all the things it does when you sit in it in the future. But I also think really interesting, and you can find a lot of studies and a fair amount of media on this right now. I think we're going to see our young fans and our young family members pull away from digital. And sometimes, maybe more oftentimes, subconsciously seek human interaction, seek outdoor interaction, seek physical activity. Sometimes it's going to be to fight against the man, right? And so I think that both of those things, there's those two components are going to have a bunch of ebbs and flows in that next 25 years. There's a revolution of hacky sack right now
So
in
true.
amateur, college, and youth baseball. Hacky sack, right? There's a lot of dudes kicking hacky sacks around in Santa Barbara, to go back to that, Neil. They weren't the baseball athletes. So it just speaks to getting out with human interaction in a live environment is still undefeated. How do you layer stuff around that to make it immersive will be really interesting to follow.
Yeah,
And
I
we are
mean,
definitely doing WMT swag hacky sacks.
there we go.
100% going
I
forward.
love that. No, the more technology changes things, the more we start to identify like what are those true human principles and behaviors that are at the root of everything. Whether the form changes, the medium might change, but there are things that we as humans, as a species, like will gravitate toward, whether it's a social community or interaction or whatever it might be.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, guys, time for you to take over the podcast and tell us your all-star follow. It can be a social media follow, it can be a blog, a podcast, newsletter, whoever it might be. Tell us who they are and why they're worth following. Chris, lead us off.
I'll give you three. Tyson Hutchins at BYU. He's got a great read on the creative space. Mostly what I see is on LinkedIn. I'm sure he's doing stuff on some of the other platforms. Alex Coppolo, SpawnCon. I love his stuff. He seeds ideas for myself and our company on a weekly basis. And then the last one is I came across this from friends at church, Cal Newport, and Deep Questions, his podcast. If you want logic and research-based reality check on AI versus a lot of what we consume through media or through social naturally of where this thing is heading, I don't know that he's fully right, but it is definitely an alternate opinion that is based on someone that has deeply researched the space of mathematics and the space of like how do we effectively use our time.
Some great calls there. I love it. Andy, who do you got for us?
So I tend to just let information flow over me. I'll, go on LinkedIn, scroll, and obviously, the algorithm presents information and half of it's garbage and half of it's, look, my kid graduated from high school. And, when LinkedIn became that, I have no idea. But, occasionally something catches your eye that's recommended to you, and I clicked on it and I said, all right, this guy's kind of interesting. And then like a week later, another post came up and I was like, all right, like two for two. This guy named Sean Baxter. Don't know him, have never met him. But he brings some really critical insights that resonate with what we're talking about here around the evolving state of a sports organization, how we need to think about product and data first. It's just never met the guy, don't know anything about him, but the way he talks about the evolution in sports really resonates with what we're doing here today at WMT. So he's the one I'll throw out there as a shout out. So Sean, there you go, man. Don't even know you, but enjoy the followers.
That is awesome. That's fantastic. We'll link all of them up in the show notes. And how about you guys? We're gonna find both you guys across social, digital, web, wherever you want to send us, as well as all things WMT Digital.
LinkedIn is really all I post on these days, so you can find me under my name.
Yeah, same thing. LinkedIn is my. I don't even think I have a Facebook account anymore. If I do, it's got pictures of me from like when I was 25. So,
Check them
LinkedIn
out.
is my home for that stuff.
Check them out and visit WMT.digital, or just Google WMT Digital, or find it anywhere, and you'll see all the great work they're doing, some of the insights, innovation. They're truly driving a lot of this industry forward, and it's starting there, starting with their clients. And cannot thank you guys enough for coming on the pod today, sharing some of your wisdom, your knowledge, your insight, your experience, and we can't wait to see what you and your partners do next. It's really exciting stuff, guys.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed speaking with Andy Zielman and Chris Free of WMT Digital. Just cannot thank them enough for coming on the pod today and giving us some of their time, insight, and knowledge. Again, they get to do some of the coolest work in the space, and they are driving a lot of new strategies, new innovations, thinking about different ways to engage fans, to collect data, to turn that data into dollars. Just really cool stuff. And make sure to keep an eye on what they're continuing to do, as well as their clients, who are really driving the innovation in this industry, and helping us all be better and think better and be more ambitious about what we're doing in the space. So thanks again to Chris and Andy for coming on the podcast today. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening, downloading, watching, however you consume this podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Hit me up on Twitter, NJChoice7, also on LinkedIn, the website, dsmsports.net, and subscribe, follow along, view this podcast, as well as clips on your preferred podcast platform. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.